Welcome, everyone, to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the National Football League for BleacherReport.com, SportsOnEarth.com, TheSportsDaily.com, and Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Brian.
Hello there, Andrea.
Now we are officially done with the first quarter of the NFL season. Are you happy now? We're finally mathematically correct here?
Oh, I'm sure some of our listeners out there were like waiting all week for you to say that. So.
Oh, I'm sure. every team is now four games in, except for, of course, the teams that were on bye last week, the New England Patriots and the Tennessee Titans. But for the most part, all teams are four games into the season. And
there has been 4 weeks of NFL action.
And we are down to just one team without a win, of course, that being the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
We have four teams, by the way, that are at 4-0. Five teams that are at 4-0. And, of course, the New England Patriots at 3-0 heading into week five. But it wasn't Jim Caldwell getting the axe as head coach of the Detroit Lions this week. No, that went to Joe Philbin, now former Miami Dolphins head coach, axed after the team lost in spectacular fashion to the New York Jets in London last week. Dan Campbell, who has served as their tight ends coach since 2011, predating Joe Philbin, is taking over as interim head coach and is already having his guys do the Oklahoma drill in practices. The controversial, concussion-causing Oklahoma drill is the way he is setting the tone for the Miami Dolphins here moving forward. And he's certainly a more aggressive style of guy compared to Philbin.
He will scare people more than Philbin ever would.
Absolutely.
Or ever could.
There's no intimidation factor to Joe Philbin.
No, he seems like a very smart and very nice person.
Yeah, and a very capable. I think we put him in that category of really good coordinator, not suited for head coach.
Yeah, he's very similar to Trestman in my mind.
Sure, sure.
He's very, very nice, polite guy, and certainly has proven to be a good offensive mind. But maybe just a little too nice to be a head coach in the NFL.
The defensive coordinator, by the way, for the Miami Dolphins, whose name escapes me at the moment, also potentially on the hot seat, might not be long for him keeping his job either, especially when you look at what the defense has, or rather has not accomplished, even though they brought in guys like Ndamukong Suh. The other story out of the Miami Dolphins is the frustration level of quarterback Ryan Tannehill, who is alleged to have yelled at his practice squad about their measly paychecks, and apparently the practice squad was allegedly told to take it easy on Tannehill because they were picking him off and making him look bad in practice. Tannehill does not deny that he might have had some disparaging remarks that he has directed at his practice squad, but denied anything along the lines of your paycheck, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, if there's truth to that, and like I certainly would understand why he would deny it, even if it is true.
Because it is a bad look.
Yeah, certainly. I think that I'll go back to Philbin real quick because it's all related.
Sure.
I think over the summer in the preseason, you mentioned something about how he was on the hot seat, and I was saying, that just it seems too early for that.
It seemed like he was the guy to be fired early in the season.
Yeah, well,
in my opinion,
I understood the sentiment, but I was just saying that maybe it was a little quick, and because it seemed like they had been making improvements under him,
Right.
But at the same time, I heard that story, and I said, if that sort of thing has gone on, and again, I don't know when those comments supposedly took place that he was talking to these practice squad players, because he's been there for a couple years, and it was just reported that he said this to practice squad. I don't know if that was like recent or if it was a while ago or whatever. But regardless,
right?
At any time that Joe Philbin was in charge of that team, if he was quote protecting the players' confidence and telling them to to let him say these things to the practice. It's just, I'm going to change my thought on this to he shouldn't be fired so quickly to why did you wait until the start of the season? I mean, this happens in baseball a lot, too, where like...
Yeah, you have three poor weeks and all of a sudden you fire the manager.
What?
You're just like, it's
no,
April.
It's April.
Figure it out
you're right.
By
you're,
now.
You're a week or two into the season.
You should have known
it's
this. What has changed?
It's time to can the manager at that point. And it's just, it's like, if it's that big a deal, you should have moved on it. It's too late. You're acting too late. By doing that so early in the season. So, and I think the same thing certainly applies here, where it's just like, you know, what are you doing? It's October, you know, it's the beginning of October, and you're firing your coach, and it's either it should wait till the end of the season, or you should have done it last year,
or should have done it sometime over the spring, the summer, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, before, so let's talk a little bit. So the owners are meeting, the NFL owners meetings are going on, and the big topic of discussion, of course, is who and when will be in Los Angeles.
Relocation, yes.
It looks like it's an inevitability that at least one, if not two teams between the St. Louis Rams, San Diego Chargers, and Oakland Raiders will be moving to Los Angeles in short order, perhaps as early as the start of the 2016 season. All three teams have submitted relocation applications to the league, all of which have been accepted. So now they get to move forward and you know, reviewing these applications and seeing the feasibility of all three teams. Oakland and San Diego are going into a joint venture in Carson, California, whereas the St. Louis Rams and owner Stan Kroenke has land already in Inglewood. There's also a stadium proposal for St. Louis, but it looks like it's going to cost millions of dollars more than anticipated. They do have a sponsor for the naming rights of the stadium, which is National Car Rental. But because it's going to be costing taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars more than anticipated, it's going to be difficult for that stadium to get built. I don't foresee all three teams moving to Los Angeles because that seems insane. But it's going to be interesting to see who does end up there, because right now, at least there are proposals in place in both San Diego and St. Louis to get new stadiums built out there. Not so much in Oakland, because Oakland doesn't just need a new football stadium should the Raiders stay. They need a new baseball stadium as well.
Yeah.
So that's going to start to get really pricey for a community that's not, you know, the top tax bracket, has a lot of tax money coming into it. So I think we're looking at a situation where I would not be surprised if the Raiders have to end up being one of those teams that move. But we'll find out more as the year progresses. But now we know that at least this is moving forward for all three teams.
Yeah, one, I don't I really have a hard time understanding the Raiders. I get it that the tax bracket isn't the highest there.
There's not a lot of money that they can. There's just not enough money to go around to build this big project, and they don't
but
even.
There's
want
so much money in the Bay Area.
But
is
the
my
other
point.
Problem, though, is that Mark Davis doesn't want to take a whole bunch of taxpayer money. He wants to figure out who can come up with some cash here, where the NFL can kick in some more money, because NFL's already kicking in money. He's throwing in a big chunk of money, so it becomes a complicated situation.
I think of all three, I think Mark Davis wants to keep them in Oakland more than the other two want to stay where they are.
I agree. I do agree with that.
The problem is that Oakland is the least prepared to be able to do something to keep the Raiders there.
Right. And we're getting into crunch time at this point with all, like again, I said, all three teams submitting these applications that are being reviewed by the league. So we're really getting into crunch time. And unless something really turns around very quickly for the Raiders and their hopes to stay in Oakland, I'm just going to, you know, I'm not using pen yet, but I'm definitely penciling in the Raiders, whether or not they have their own spot in Carson, they're sharing that spot with San Diego, they're sharing a spot with the Rams or whatever ends up happening out there.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's such a weird situation. Like, the thought that the Chargers won't be in San Diego probably is the weirdest to me, because we've seen the Rams in L.A., we've seen Oakland in L.A. before. But the Chargers have been there since the 60s, since they started.
Right,
and
but they've never really drummed up enough interest. It's not a very sustainable place for a football team.
It's a very sustainable place for
things that aren't football.
For Super Bowls. They love to have the Super Bowl out there, and why not? It's beautiful weather at that time of year. So, and I suppose that, you know, as long as that stadium stays, and maybe they'll still have the Super Bowl there every now and then. But I don't know if it's that bad, you know.
Right. Also, another thing that came out of the league meetings this week, the international series, the games, of course, that are played typically in England, will continue at least through 2025, and there's a possibility that they could do some international games not in the UK, whether it's somewhere else in Europe or maybe South America or even Mexico City, which has always been a place that the NFL has had some degree of interest in at least having a game. There's a lot of NFL fans in Mexico City. It's just a matter of transportation and safety and logistics and a lot of things that come into play there. So we will be seeing teams.
So much easier to watch a game in Mexico City too.
But we will
be
seeing
teams to make the trip too. You know.
But regardless of where these games end up being played, NFL teams will continue to be playing not in the U.S. at least twice a year and through 2025. So every fan of every team should be prepared to see their team at 8:30 in the morning Central Time.
At some point.
Potentially. So everybody, you know, plan your schedules now.
I don't know, I think twice a year is kind of dumb. It seems, especially after this week it happening, you know, it's kind of a nice novelty, I think. You know, there's breakfast football, I like to call it. But to do that more than once a year just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But I don't know, I never really understood why they started playing over there anyway. But, you know, that's
just gotta expand that audience, get more eyes on the product.
I guess.
Before we head into our minute picks for week five, I just want to take a few minutes to talk about something that has piqued my interest over the past 4 weeks, and that is not just the 4-0 Cincinnati Bengals, but their quarterback, Andy Dalton. He's having a spectacular season, even by early season Andy Dalton standards. Last year, not a good year for him. Threw 19 touchdowns to 17 interceptions, sacked 21 times, had under 3,400 passing yards, and it's led to him having a career completion percentage of just 61.9%. But last year, you know, he had a lot of issues to deal with. Tyler Eifert, heading to injured reserve after being hurt in week one. Marvin Jones not being there the whole year. Nagging injuries off and on to A.J. Green, Jermaine Gresham as well. Not having any of those guys in their playoff loss definitely doomed them in that first game last year. More so than anything that Dalton has done, which is a departure from other playoff losses for the Bengals. But through the first 4 weeks of the season right now, Andy Dalton has a completion percentage of 67.2%. He has 1,187 passing yards. He's thrown 9 touchdowns to 1 interception and has taken 2 sacks. He's on pace for a career year of 4,748 yards, 36 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and 8 sacks if things continue on how they have now. Now, I don't think 4 interceptions and 8 sacks is where it's going to be. I think it's going to be more about 6 or 8 interceptions and maybe 10 or 12 sacks. But even that is pretty impressive to finish out a regular season. Right now he's got a quarterback rating of 123.0. That's compared to 87.1 on his career and 83.5 last year. So basically what I'm saying is Andy Dalton is playing lights out football, and he's taking advantage of all of those impressive weapons he has on offense, spreading the ball around and looking way more confident while doing it.
Yeah, I think it's not a secret that the Bengals are playing some of the best football being played right now.
They're playing inspired football, and part of it, I think, is because a lot of the players over the summer were just like, we know our playoff window is still open, but after this year, it might start closing. We're very, very focused on getting this postseason win, getting as far as we can. Everything kind of feels a little different this year. And now when you look at the on-field product, it sure does feel different this year.
Yeah, and I'll reference something we saw in Inside the NFL this week.
They had
Dalton mic'd up for their clips there of that game, and I don't know. He seems more
vocal, more leader, more calm down.
He seems more like a quarterback.
He's
calmer. He's looser. You know, but he's also kind of firing
more
guys up, and yeah, he looks like he's taken on a leadership role, and obviously it's easy to have fun when you're playing well, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And so a lot of that was that, but at the same time, it's as in control as he's seemed since he's been there.
I agree, and this is something that Marvin Lewis, the head coach there, and the offensive coordinator, Hugh Jackson has been really trying to pull out of Dalton these past couple of years. It's get some fire in him, get some confidence in
especially
him.
Especially Hugh,
make him be a leader, get him to yell at some guys when they make mistakes and all of that. And he's really starting to finally, in year five, embrace that role. And it's none too soon considering, he has a contract structured in a similar way as Colin Kaepernick, where there could be an opt-out if the Bengals so choose
to prove it deal,
this offseason. It's a year-by-year kind of prove-it thing. And as long as this keeps up, at this level or some level similar to this, I don't think the Bengals have anything to worry about in terms of their franchise quarterback moving forward. And maybe this team can get out of quarterback purgatory, not have – you know, a Matt Stafford, Alex Smith kind of guy, but really have a leader and a face of the offense for the foreseeable future.
Well, I think
that's very optimistic because we have to see him play in prime time.
I think
play in the postseason.
I think he could venture into the Flacco territory,
sure.
which is the way I like to phrase it the best is, and I'm borrowing from PFT commenter here, he's both elite and not elite.
Sure. Well, when you're both elite and not elite, that puts you in the good to very good category,
sure.
And there are so few quarterbacks who can
mm-hmm.
even be in that category at this point
mm-hmm.
that you want to hold on to something like that. And I know that it can and often does and has led to quarterback purgatory situations, but when you look at the state of quarterbacks around the league, which is, you know, a common case, you know, you don't have 32 Aaron Rodgers ever. So you got to make do and try to get as good a quarterback as you can.
Very true. And if you will allow me
sure.
to pick up my drum and bang on it again.
Sure.
Because I've done this for the last couple weeks. I do want to remind everybody of the big grain of salt here. And that's Dalton in prime time.
Right.
Dalton
which
in crunch
yet.
Time. Now, this is probably the best Dalton that we've seen.
Right, and the best cast of characters around him.
And
to
the
make
best
his
the best
his
cast has looked around him, definitely. But at the same time, you know, we do need to pump the brakes for now because it's still early in the season and we haven't seen him play at night yet. So, he looks like, at least more than ever, he looks like he could potentially turn the corner this year. And I'm just saying, I'm smiling while I'm saying this because I feel like I said the same thing last year.
Oh, I say year after year. I mean, this is a Bengals team that I've believed in for so long
because
of the depth of the roster, the completeness mm-hmm. of the roster, the talent of the roster. And a lot of that was depleted by injury last year. Or, you know, Geno Atkins not being 100% after coming back from his injury and things like that. All of those things, all the stars are aligning,
mm-hmm.
at least at this early point in the season for this team. And then when you talk about the rest of the AFC North, the Steelers are 2-2, won't have Ben Roethlisberger back for a few more weeks. Ravens have only won one game. Browns have only won one game. Ravens and Browns play this week, so one of those teams is still going to be a one-win team. So, you know, things are setting up really well for the Bengals to win this division. And it's early. But,
and
you know,
so
and
now they have to just do it.
And anything can happen, but now they just sort of have to do it. Oh, speaking of what we were talking about earlier with Los Angeles, rumors are swirling that Mark Davis, of course, Raiders owner Mark Davis, is going to make a deal very shortly to sell part of his ownership of the team to an LA investor, according
Ooh.
To a source talking to Bleacher Report there.
Interesting.
So if that's the case, then if that ends up coming through, we can just call the idea of a new stadium in Oakland pretty much dead.
I mean, unless that LA investor happens to like Oakland a lot.
Or has some sort of pull in Oakland
as
well.
Wants to keep him up in Oakland.
But
yeah, that sounds like it's leaning LA at that point.
Sounds like it would lean LA.
Actually, nice segue. I did, before we officially wrapped this segment up, I did want to bring up 2 points, the first of which being Mark Davis, and that's just that if you guys get a chance, check out the ESPN article.
It was really great. I know everybody's heard about the van and the haircut and
fascinating read.
And P.F. Chang's and all of these quirks about him, but read the whole article because it's very fascinating. I could read a whole book on Mark Davis.
He's weird, but he's very interesting
he's very football smart because he's the son of Al.
Yeah,
guys. We can make fun of the way he looks all the time and whatever, but he is the son of Al.
If your dad's Al Davis, there's no way you don't know football. So,
exactly.
But yeah, it's definitely a very very interesting read, and he's definitely has his eccentricities, but they're interesting to read about. So
yeah, and
anyway,
there's more to the article than that, so I really recommend
it. The other thing I did want to touch on before we wrap this up is you mentioned at the very beginning that the only winless team at this point is the 0-4 Lions.
Yes.
And I just want to say this for any potential Lions fans that are out there listening and anybody else just look. Don't worry about that play. That was the big media takeaway at the end of that game was, you know, oh, the guy batted out. It was the rules. The refs missed it, and the refs messed up, and now the league's apologized and all this stuff. I mean,
and the ref has been downgraded, so he's not going to be able to ref any playoff games
this year. Had Cam Chancellor not been able to punch that ball out of Calvin's hand, and he was able to cross the line, there was a minute and a half, minute 40, I think, left on the clock at that point. And it's the Lions. I was waiting for...
You were waiting for that moment the whole game?
No, no. I was, honestly, up until... I can't remember which player it was, because there was a lot of defensive linemen for the Lions that were in Seattle's backfield all day. But at one point, they lodged the ball loose and scooped it up and scored. And that was when I said, there it is. Because the whole game, I was just like, God, are they just going to play this bad the whole game? They need to get to the where they do the Lions thing, which is to make everybody think that they're going to have a chance.
They could really win this game.
Right. And so then there it was. That was the play that got them to 13 to 10. And so I was like, okay, well, that's going to set this up. Now they're going to be on the verge of winning and then lose. And because that's what the Lions do, especially this year's Lions, feels more Lions than the last couple years, I'd say.
Yeah. So it happened.
So, yeah, it was definitely a missed call, but, you know, the thought that the Lions were actually going to pull that one out is just we all saw in prime time on Monday night what the Lions fans deal with, because you're looking at that team saying, man, these guys are hanging with Seattle, and you know, they're supposed to go get crushed because they're not any good, but they're good.
Yeah.
They just don't know how to they get in their own way, and we saw some classic Lions. There's been a few classic Lions moments already this young
season.
Yeah.
Well, and when you talk about the Cleveland Browns too, I mean, that was a classic Cleveland Browns mm-hmm. moment with the 12 penalties and then the final penalty coming when he misses the 39-yard field goal. You know, Tremont Williams being offsides, then gets a 34-yard redo, and they make it, and they win.
To say I empathize with Browns fans is an understatement.
We're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we'll come back and make our Week 5 minute picks. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And now it's the second half of our show, which means it's time for Minute Picks for Week 5 here of the 2015 NFL season. This week we have four teams on bye: the Miami Dolphins, who need it, the Minnesota Vikings, the New York Jets, and the undefeated Carolina Panthers. We start, of course, on Thursday night. The Indianapolis Colts are at the Houston Texans, typically a matchup I really much enjoy watching in primetime, J.J. Watt versus Andrew Luck. But Andrew Luck, of course, is questionable. He's got that partially separated shoulder. Even Matt Hasselbeck right now, his backup, is questionable with an illness. I do expect Andrew Luck to play. I'm not looking forward to seeing him behind that O-line dealing with guys like Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt as I have in the past, because I so fear that shoulder becoming fully separated. And if you don't have Andrew Luck, it's basically the Colts are doomed in the same way when Peyton Manning had that neck surgery, they were doomed. I'm going to go with the Houston Texans, but I don't think that the quarterback situation there is going to look any good.
Well, it hasn't so far.
It hasn't so far. I don't think it's going to turn around tomorrow.
Nobody's going to blame you for making that assertion there. So, the Texans really need this game. Not one that they've had so far that they really needed. I mean, they keep needing them, I guess. But
yeah.
this is a monkey that's been on their back for a while. They haven't been able to deal with the Colts since Peyton was there, and it's just there's a historical thing here. And I think this is as good a chance as they've had to turn that corner in a minute. But I'm still going to go with the Colts. I'm going to go with the Colts until the Colts prove me wrong against the rest of the AFC South.
Good point. Heading towards Sunday's early games, we start with the Chicago Bears at the Kansas City Chiefs. Chicago finally got their win last week.
Yeah.
Barely.
I called that one.
Because the Oakland Raiders definitely put up a fight there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to be a winning week for the Bears on Sunday. I think going to Kansas City, we all know, is a very tough place to play
mm-hmm.
as visitors, very loud, very intimidating stadium. Kansas City has a very good defense. They've got Jamal Charles. They've got a workable offense in the passing game. I think that all of those things combined, plus having the home field advantage, I think all of that trumps what Chicago can bring to the table here. So I am going Chiefs.
I'll say this one a bit more succinctly, and that's just that, you know, I I did call. I said if Cutler's in, I'll take the Bears last week, and you know, magically they were able to do that. But no, this is on the road, and Kansas City's just playing better football right now, so it's kind of hard to go with the Bears in this situation.
Next up, my pick for game of the week, Seattle Seahawks at the Cincinnati Bengals.
Ooh, that should be a
this
fun
is,
one.
This is going to be a big test for that quarterback, Andy Dalton, mm-hmm. who we talked about earlier, because he's going to be facing one of the top secondaries in the league. But that's a lot of people for that top secondary to cover. So I think that's going to make things difficult for Seattle. I think that the way that the Bengals are playing defense right now compared to Seattle's offensive line situation – means it might be a really rough day for Russell Wilson, mobility or not. And we still haven't seen Seattle figure out how to properly use Jimmy Graham. Plus, this game is in Cincinnati. It's not in prime time. It's in the nice obscurity of 1 p.m. Eastern time. Bengals.
Yeah, you know, in Seattle, I think this would make me nervous enough as a Seattle fan.
Sure.
But I wouldn't. If I was a Seattle fan, but yeah, I wouldn't be comfortable if I were a Seattle fan, I wouldn't be comfortable going to Cincinnati at all. And especially with how good they're playing, and what Seattle's look like. And, you know, I think we saw on Monday again, that the Lions figured out a way to kind of handle them.
Yeah.
And I think the
Bengals
the
are a better team
can,
than the Lions.
The Bengals can replicate. I think they have similar talent levels. They're just they're using it correctly right now,
right.
And the Lions aren't. So, yeah, the Bengals are rolling right now. This is a noon game, so I'm going the Bengals.
Next, we have Washington at the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta, one of the other undefeated teams in the league. I think that they remain that way after week five. I think Washington has done some surprising things and played a little bit better than a lot of people had anticipated. But Atlanta's just doing so much with what they have. You know, the offense, the defense, you know, everything looks to have new life with the new coaching staff in place there. And this is in their home dome where they usually get things done. You know, more often than not, we'll put it that way. So I'm going to go with the Falcons.
I think Washington's shown the ability to have a stingy defense at times. There's still kind of a lot of question marks on offense there. I think you're right. They've surprised some people with how competitive they've been in some games.
Yeah, especially with the running of the ball and some of that defense stuff that they've done has been a little bit better than anticipated.
Exactly. But I'll just say this. The Falcons, this is the last team that they play from the NFC East, and they've owned the rest of them. So I'm going to go with the Falcons here.
We'll remain with the Falcons' ownership of the East. Jacksonville Jaguars are at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This is going to be a tough game because both of these teams are not playing well right now. You know, Jacksonville fans really up in arms about falling to the 40-year-old Matt Hasselbeck-led Colts last week. But I'll tell you this what this month, Jacksonville fans, Tampa Bay's worse. And I think that, you know, it's not a long trip to take here. You know, it's not much of a home field advantage, especially because it's not like a ton of people go to Buccaneers
Tampa,
games anyway.
Yeah.
So I think
especially when they're not good, they don't show up.
Yeah, I think Jacksonville can come in and win this game. I think that Jacksonville is the better team, and I think they're going to prove it. I'm going Jaguars.
Yeah, I think that could happen.
Sure.
You know, it's the Buccaneers, and we've seen that being at home doesn't make much of a difference for them. The only game they've won was in New Orleans at this point. And actually, they played, I thought, okay when they were in Houston, too. It's almost like they're playing better on the road than they are at home, and maybe there's something to that.
Well, look at who they're playing on the road.
Yeah. But regardless, I'd say that I like Jacksonville in this situation. I'm certainly not as down on what happened last week in Indy as I would be if I were a Jags fan, obviously, and we saw how they were acting. But I don't think it was that bad of a loss last week. And like you said, I think Indy's probably better than Tampa is. So, I'm going to go with Jacksonville.
New Orleans Saints are at the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, New Orleans trying to get things put together right now with the passing game and running the ball with Mark Ingram and so on. But there's just still a lot of things there that I just say questionable. And I think that going into Philadelphia in a hostile environment like this with an Eagles team that has a lot to prove and chips on their shoulders because things have not gone as well as planned so far, it's going to be a tough battle for the Saints. I'm going to go with the Eagles.
Yeah, I think we saw the Saints get their first win last Sunday. They kind of, there was a little bit of a flashback to the old Saints there at the end of the game,
least
when they put things together and figured out a way to pull that game
out.
Well,
yeah, because you can trust Drew Brees with a 2-minute or 4-minute drive.
Right,
you
right,
know?
Right, exactly. So I think that was definitely good for them in their season. I think this is a bad spot for them, though, because Philly is in all kinds of ways needing to get this win at this point. They've dropped to 1-3, and but I also think I was also somewhat I felt like they were somewhat improved last week too, and I think Bradford's starting to get a little bit better handle on what's going on.
Yep.
And this is the Philly's the type of team that once they figure that out, if they figure that out, then they're going to be a hard team to deal with later in the season, I think. So.
Correct.
I'll go with Philly here mainly because I like the situation for them a little bit better.
The 1-3 Cleveland Browns are at the 1-3 Baltimore 1-3, excuse me, Baltimore Ravens. This is the best chance the Cleveland Browns have in a long time to go into Baltimore and win. The Ravens are depleted on offense, to say the least. Well, they're going to get left tackle Eugene Monroe back from his concussion. Maybe Crockett Gilmore, the tight end. It looks like he's still going to be out with a calf injury. Steve Smith, he has a couple of micro fractures in his back. He's not been completely ruled out yet, and I'm with Mike Pettin till they call him out. I don't believe it till I see it because it's Steve Smith. But it doesn't look like he's going to go. Fellow receiver Michael Campanaro also injured his back last week. He's on injured reserve. There's not a lot of weapons for Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco to throw to, and that's going to help because the Cleveland Browns pass defense is just terrible right now. That being said, this game is in Baltimore. You want to talk about a team with a culture of losing like Cleveland, being able to go in there with the kind of mentality where they think that they can win this game, let alone doing it on the field, is going to be a tall order. I'm going to go hesitantly with the Ravens.
Okay.
And because I know this division so well, I took the whole minute.
Well, I'll squeeze in a little bit there. I think the Browns they looked a lot more competent last week. At least
they were able to hang with the Chargers point for point practically and yard for yard literally.
Right, 3 3/4 of quarters of in that game until the very
end.
Until
the final drive.
And then they kind of did the Browns thing like we discussed earlier. So I expect them to do something similar this week where I think they're gonna put up a good fight, but I think the Ravens will pull this one out. Even with their injuries, and we saw them last week, they kind of won in spite of themselves, I think, in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
Because Pittsburgh really
Scobie.
Gave them every chance to walk out of there with the win. So, and they obliged. But, I think the Ravens should be able to take care of business at home.
Next, we have the St. Louis Rams at the Green Bay Packers. I would feel a little bit more confident about St. Louis with this game if it was in St. Louis. And you know, they do have that tough defensive front. And I think it's going to get to Aaron Rodgers a couple of times in this game. But Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL. He's got a great supporting cast around him. The defense does just enough. St. Louis doesn't have enough on offense anyway to kind of mess up with the Packers or hang with them point for point. This is in Lambeau, dudes. Like, it's Green Bay. I'm going with the Packers.
Yeah, I could even see myself potentially picking the Rams if it were in St. Louis. But, that's just going to be a really tough one to be in Green Bay just because Green Bay, they're just really rolling right now. And there's not much else you can say except that you know, Rodgers is playing the position probably this season anyway. Rodgers is just really just playing way too well right now for St. Louis to have a shot.
Yeah, it's you can't really even compare the two teams in terms of quality of offense and quality of quarterback. And it's in Green Bay, so
yeah.
That is that basically. Next we have the final game of the early slate in the afternoon on Sunday. We have the Buffalo Bills at the Tennessee Titans. Titans coming off of their bye week. Buffalo coming off of a week where what'd they do last week?
No, they lost to the Giants, if you recall.
Ah, yes, they lost to the Giants because you were saying, I'm going to go with Buffalo, but the Giants. I think Buffalo can win this game. Tennessee is going to obviously benefit from the week off because you've got a rookie quarterback there, and he can spend more time getting prepared, and they can game plan for the Bills. The Bills have such a good defense, and when Tyrod Taylor's really getting things going, it goes. And I just don't trust the Tennessee Titans enough to even to come off of a bye week and play at home and win this game. I like the Bills.
You said this is in Nashville, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's. I don't really care about that. I like the Bills here in this situation. They're coming off that loss. You could see Rex was being polite, but, like, you could tell how steamed he was at the end of that game. And, like, I'm just betting this week. And he's such a good defensive coordinator that he's going to be able to deal with
a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I don't think the Titans win this one.
Arizona Cardinals are at the Detroit Lions. Can the Lions bounce back from their heartbreaking loss in Seattle? I'm going to say no. I'm saying that Arizona can come in to Detroit and win this game. It's a late game, so it's at a time that they're comfortable with, A. B, I don't trust Detroit's secondary to be able to do much to stop Carson Palmer. C, I don't expect Detroit's front to do much to attack Carson Palmer. And D, the Cardinals are the better team. I am going with Arizona.
What to do here? I mean, I think the Cardinals probably will beat the Lions, and if to phrase this as the bitter Lions fan that I've become, maybe I should say the Lions will find a way to lose to the Cardinals.
Sure, but the Cardinals are a very good team, just as Seattle was.
Yeah,
so.
I'm saying we saw last week that they can hang with the better teams in the league. They're good enough to. They just get in their own way. So.
Right, but also think about Seattle's offensive line versus Arizona's. Arizona's isn't perfect, but it's not in the situation.
It's not as bad
Seattle's
as Seattle's was for certain. But I do like I think I'm gonna go ahead and pick the Lions here. They have to get a win at some point. I think they tasted it last week, and again, even though I was bitterly saying that the Lions were going to lose that game regardless, like, I don't think that they thought that, and so maybe they felt like they let that one get away, and so they're going to come home, they're going to get fired up for this Cardinals team, I think.
Next, we have the New England Patriots, who are also coming off of their bye week, and they are at the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas, of course, reeling with injuries. Tony Romo, Dez Bryant, Lance Dunbar, done for the year with a torn ACL and MCL. They do get some key guys back on defense, such as Greg Hardy, so that'll at least help that side of the ball. But New England's coming off of a bye week. They're ready. They're rested. They're prepared. Dallas, you know, in this situation – would need Romo and Dez out there to kind of match what New England does on offense. You know, even though they don't have this, you know, Randy Moss-like figure in Dez Bryant or whatever, they're really effectively moving the ball right now. I'm going to go with the Patriots, even though this is in Dallas.
Okay, of all the teams in the league that didn't need the bye, it was the Patriots.
They need it right now. They could have used a Week 10 bye.
That's what I'm saying. They were cruising, and then they got to stop for a minute, but... if anything, that should help them be even a little bit more healthy, and that's the opposite of what the Cowboys are right now. I think this should be a good game because it's in Dallas, and I think that they're hungry after losing the last two in comeback fashion.
Yeah, but I don't trust Brandon Whedon.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, when it comes down to it, it's the Patriots led by Tom Brady, and they're firing on all cylinders, and I don't expect it to stop this week.
Our final of three late afternoon games on Sunday features the Denver Broncos at the Oakland Raiders, where the Raiders feel most comfortable playing and have done some good work this year. I think the Raiders are going to bring it to the Denver Broncos as much as they possibly can. But it's not just the Peyton Manning thing. It is that Denver defense and that Denver secondary in particular that has been very impressive all season long to this point. And I think it's going to make life just a little too difficult for Derek Carr and company, so I'm going to go with Denver. I'm picking a lot of road teams here, but, you know, and I think that Oakland could catch Denver, but that Denver defense, I don't know. It's just too good.
Yeah, this is actually a really tough one to call just because, like you said, the Raiders have been playing really well, and since that first week, they took that shot to the jaw, and then, like, they've come back and fought, and...
And even when they've lost games, they've been competitive.
Yeah, exactly. And I definitely expect them to be competitive in this game. The defense, that defense in Denver is humming right now. And Peyton's not quite the same Peyton, but he's still Peyton. You know, even 80% Peyton is a lot better than a lot. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think that. I think probably Denver's D is enough to push this one in their favor. It's a divisional game, and they're playing really well, and there's not really any reason to think that they'll stop this week.
Sunday night football. We got another NFC East team in prime time. They're really loading those up early in the season. The San Francisco 49ers are at the New York Giants. I'm not highly impressed with anything that the New York Giants are putting together right now, but basically San Francisco 49ers, offense, defense, everything, coaching is either a leather chair fart in a press conference or a sad trombone. You know, pick your depressing noise. I'm going to go with the New York Giants.
I am sorry, but there is no way that was a chair. There's no way that was a chair.
No. And all the many, many years of there being press conferences.
How many leather chairs have been sat on?
And we've had no
near microphones.
We've had no chair fart noises ever. Sorry.
I think that's pretty much sums up their. That sums up the Niners right now. That plus you said that they just lost Ahmad Brooks, right?
Yeah, he is away for an indeterminate amount of time with dealing with some family issues. He will not be traveling to New York or the Meadowlands for this game.
This just doesn't smell good for them at all. The Giants are really going to have to step on themselves to lose that game, I think.
And finally, Monday Night Football, a long layoff for Mike Vick and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who take on the San Diego Chargers in San Diego. I'm going to go with the Pittsburgh Steelers here. I think that they'll have the ability to rebound with a long week of – long 10 days of preparation, 10 and a half days of preparation for Vic as compared to 3.5 days last week. They got Martavis Bryant back. The defense has totaled 14 sacks right now, whereas you got Phillip Rivers, who has taken 12 sacks so far this season, doesn't have his left tackle, doesn't have his left guard, doesn't have his center. He will be getting Antonio Gates back, which is going to be a useful weapon considering that Steelers secondary. But I think overall, I think Pittsburgh can and will win this game. They need to win this game, and I think they can do it. So my pick is the Steelers.
And
a lot of road teams I'm picking.
Yeah,
guys.
I know. And that's what's funny is I'm sitting there thinking the same thing. It's like, man, I shouldn't be picking this many road teams. But I don't feel like I picked the worst team I picked that was on the road is probably the Jaguars, and they're in Tampa, so I'm not feeling too bad about that. But I'm going to go with you. I thought about this one for a while, and it's mainly that offensive line of the Chargers. We saw them, almost lose last week to the Browns, or maybe they should have lost to the Browns. I don't know.
They're so close.
Yeah, we've seen them, they have some issues, and I agree, it's not that Steelers are without fault, certainly not, and it's hard to say, exactly what we'll get out of Vic and all that, and the defense isn't perfect by any stretch. But I like the idea of there's almost 2 weeks of preparation for this for Mike Vic, and they should be able to put a good game plan together that can get him a win with all those weapons that he's got.
And that's the Minute Picks for Week 5 here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. And before we take it to the break, before we go home, the NFL just confirmed that Tremont Williams was not offsides in that Browns play that led to the second field goal that was... So if that moment could get any more Browns, it has.
So both the Lions and the Browns...
reached peak Lions and peak Browns in Week 4.
Quote-unquote lost because of referee issues.
Yep.
While stepping on themselves.
While at the same time stepping on themselves.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast to send y'all home. So stick around. We're almost out of here.
Yes. When I first met my Spodey Odey, Dopealicious Angel, I can remember that damn thing like yesterday. The way she moved reminded me of a brown stallion horse with skates on, smooth like a hot comb on nap-ass hill. I walked up on her and was almost paralyzed. Her neck was smelling sweeter than a plate of yams with extra syrup. Eyes beaming like 4 carats a piece, just blinding.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. It is week 5 of the 2015 season, and I hope everybody does enjoy all of the wonderful football games ahead of us this week.
Of course.
And, of course, we always appreciate you guys tuning in and downloading or streaming our wonderful podcast here. We appreciate all of our listeners, whether you've been here from day 1 or day 30 or just today. I am, of course, your host, Andrea Hengst. I cover the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns for BleacherReport.com, the Cleveland Browns and the AFC North for Scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, and the entire National Football League for SportsOnEarth.com and TheSportsDaily.com. You can also find me on the Twitter at FBall_Andrea. That's F at FBALL underscore Andrea.
And again, I'm Brian. I'm the co-host or sub-host of this
sub-host
podcast, as well as the producer of the podcast, the F-Ball NFL podcast. And I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
Thanks again, of course, for all of you joining us this week here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Enjoy the games, and we'll be back next Wednesday to recap all of the wonderful and probably astounding things that have happened in in week 5, and of course, preview week 6. So make sure you stick with us. And again, thanks for listening here at the F-Ball NFL podcast.
Later.
Peace.